Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Caritas. Today is October 8th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. Title of today's podcast, The Fed Out of Ammo, But Firing Anyway. Now, I said yesterday I did want to have a brief conversation in regards to President Trump's decision to withdraw U.S. forces from Syria. So we are going to touch on that briefly. We're also going to touch on the U.S.-China trade talks and some further developments that were underway today. We have a potential Brexit breakdown. And then, of course, we're going to get to the Federal Reserve. And they are no surprise to us here at the Capital News. They are expanding their balance sheet. So a lot to get to. So let's get started. First, with President Trump's order to withdraw U.S. forces from Syria. The Capital News is about peace and prosperity, the truth where we can find it in free market capitalism. We are totally against these endless wars. They are one of the main reasons why this country is in financial dire straits. This is the swamp. This is the military-industrial complex. These are military contractors, defense contractors. These are the banks that finance them. The whole kit and caboodle up and down the rows. Okay? We can't afford it. We are not the policemen of the world. We are not supposed to be the policemen of the world. No, we are supposed to take our marching orders from the U.S. Constitution. Nowhere in the U.S. Constitution does it state that the United States is supposed to be the policemen of the world. It's not our responsibility, and we can't afford it. If you don't want to police your own streets, meaning in Syria, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Venezuela, that's your problem. Have your own revolution. Do what you have to do for your own freedom. Sorry if it gets dirty. That's the way of the world. That's what history tells us time and time and time again. And this time is not going to be any different. So I applaud the president for making this decision. Now, of course, he is getting a lot of blowback from Republicans, particularly neocons, and also from Democrats. Even though Democrats want to pat themselves on the back and pretend to be anti-war candidates in the anti-war party, which couldn't be further from the truth if you understand the history of the Democratic Party. I mean, let's just go down the list real quick. World War I, Woodrow Wilson, a Democrat. World War II, FDR, a Democrat. World War II in Korea, Truman, a Democrat. Vietnam, Johnson, Kennedy, Democrats. Was it continued by Nixon? Yes, it was. But you know all that shenanigans, and we eventually got out of that. But that was a quagmire. I mean, this is what happens. It sort of started to flip on its head in 9/11. But we were attacked for the first time since Pearl Harbor. So what are you going to do? You're just going to sit there? So there had to be some sort of recourse. So we're in Afghanistan. We've been there for much, much too long. Again, that is one of the endless wars. We go into Iraq for no reason whatsoever, other than to appease the military-industrial complex. We go bust. But that's okay. Everybody else made out like bandits. But the American people got flipped, you know, got stuck paying a bill, and just, it was another quagmire. Now we're involved in Syria. Been there for far too long. Now you got a president who campaigned on being anti-war and stopping these endless wars, which was not going to be an easy task. But nevertheless, it appears that the president is attempting to make good on that campaign promise. It is good for this nation. And so I applaud him, and I hope that we can stay out of that combat theater. But again, you have the likes of Senator Lindsey Graham coming out and saying this is a terrible move. Can't believe Donald Trump did this. We're leaving the Kurds, who are our allies in the area, we're leaving them for slaughter because we're allowing Turkey now to go in and stage an offensive against Syrian forces and against ISIS and all this stuff. And, you know, the Turks don't like the Kurds, so they're just going to obliterate them. Now, I have to say, if that does happen, that will be extremely problematic, because if we decided to make allies with the Kurds, and now this is sort of turning our backs on them, and they do get massacred because they're not a military force, they do not have the equipment that Turkey does, they will be massacred if Turkey makes that move. Now, Donald Trump even said publicly and even on Twitter that if the Turks do this, he will once again destroy the Turkish economy. And if you understand what has been going on with some sanctions and how the United States has been targeting the Turkish lira, which is their currency, it has been decimated over the past several months. So it has happened. Donald Trump could do it once again. And hopefully President Erdogan of Turkey does not attack the Kurds and cause another quagmire in and of itself in that region, because chances are, if that does happen, we're going to have to go right back in. So let's hope that that does not happen, but those are the concerns. So you got Lindsey Graham, you also have Nikki Haley, the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations within the Trump administration, saying the same thing. We've made friends and allies with the Kurds. This is, you know, a betrayal. We cannot do this. This is such a shame. Yada, yada, yada. How much longer are we supposed to stay there then? Answer that question. I mean, until 100% is wiped out, how are you ever going to confirm that 100% of ISIS has been eliminated? All it takes is one nut job to say, I'm a member of ISIS, and that's it. Now you have somebody. So that's not 100%. When's it supposed to end? How much money do you want to spend? How many forces are we supposed to send there? And how long are we supposed to keep them there? I mean, nobody can give you an answer. And this is a sign as to who greases their palms. That's all you have to understand. That's all you have to understand. So that's that. We applaud the president for this. Not an easy decision at all. I understand that. But let's hope that everything works out for the better. And I'm thankful that these troops are coming home, and I'm sure they are, and I'm sure their families are as well. It's just been far too long that we've been involved with these endless wars. They have to stop. They have to come to an end, one way or the other. To some of the market news, and then we'll get to some of the other headlines as well. The S&P lost 46 points, down 1.6%. The Dow gave back 314 points, a loss of 1.2%. The NASDAQ lost 132, down 1.7%. And the Russell 2000, the small cap index, gave back 25 points, also a loss of 1.7% for the day. The Dow Jones Transports lost 1.9%. The New York Stock Exchange was also down 1.5%. Now, some of these major indexes were a little bit choppy, but mostly in the red throughout the entirety of the day. A lot going on, folks. Bad headlines coming out in regards to the U.S.-China trade talks, which we're going to talk about here in a minute. Continuation with Federal Reserve policy. Where does it stand? What is Jay Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve and company, what are they going to do? That's the crux of today's podcast, so we're going to get to that. But not good. And this is also, again, further validation of our very simple, yet so far very accurate volatility model. And we are continuing to see these movements of 1% to the downside or 1% to the upside. And like we said in a previous podcast very recently, that we anticipate this to be the case for the remainder of the year. So far, we are on track. We have oil relatively flat from yesterday's podcast. WTI is at $52.40, and Brent, the international metric, is trading at $58 a barrel. Because of the shenanigans and sort of another flight to safety, we had a little bid in the precious metal space. We have gold trading at $1,509 an ounce. Silver is trading at $17.80 an ounce. Stay diversified, people. And what we're going to talk about here later with the Federal Reserve expanding its balance sheet, not calling it QE, but nevertheless printing money, monetizing the debt, you better be diversified. You better get some precious metals. Physical bullion with the coins, with the bars, ETFs, own gold, silver mining stocks, combination thereof, get diversified, because if they're going to obliterate the U.S. dollar, you better have some sort of alternative. And precious metals is going to give you some sort of hedge. We have the U.S. 10-year Treasury down a little bit, and again, another flight to safety, now yielding 1.54%. And we have the VIX trading up, of course, and is now trading at $20.28. And just to stay consistent with what we've been talking about here, FedEx continues its decline and lost an additional 2.6% for the day. So the Dow Transports down 1.9%, FedEx itself down 2.6%, although I do believe U.S. Steel was up 1%, just to be consistent with a couple individual stocks that we've been focusing on recently. So first, to the U.S.-China trade talks. There is further deterioration Before they even get started, Vice Premier of China, Li He, is supposed to be here on Thursday. Yet we've known very early on this week that the Chinese have removed key proponents from the table. They are not going to change their industrial procedures. They're not going to give up on IP theft, basically. They're not going to admit that IP theft is what they do, but that they're basically saying, we're not going to change our industrial policies. We're not going to give up our subsidies to our companies, just like we've been saying here all week. The United States subsidizes our industries. We are bailing out our farmers, okay? We gave trillions of dollars to our banking system. Those are subsidies, ladies and gentlemen. We give subsidies to big pharma. We give subsidies to big oil, big energy, okay? Maybe if we stop subsidizing our industries, maybe then China will say we'll stop subsidizing ours as well. Highly doubt it. Highly doubt it. And if either one of them said it, I wouldn't believe the U.S. I wouldn't believe the Chinese. And that's sort of the problem. Now, one of the other things, and I don't remember if I said this yesterday or not, because the main focus was on GE, GM, and Boeing. But we had, you know, there was that story out yesterday in regards to the U.S.-China trade talks. Indirectly, by the way, this is very much indirect. But you had the, well, I don't even know who it was, the general manager, I think, or head coach of the Houston Rockets, an NBA basketball team, going to Twitter, making a statement that was pretty much in support of the people protesting in Hong Kong. Basically, you know, supporting free speech and the right to protest. Well, no, 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 can't do that because there are big deals between the NBA and China. And so you had the commissioner of the NBA come out and scold this member of the Houston Rockets and say, you have to delete that tweet and you have to issue a apology to the Chinese stat right now, right now. Because we're talking about hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars on the line. We don't like it. So you better delete it and you better issue an apology. So we have an American organization with the National Basketball Association siding with the Communist Party in China because they are going to, they're talking about contracts, you're talking about money here, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, over the essence of the United States of America, the First Amendment, the right to free speech, the right to protest. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. It's all about the almighty dollar. There are no values anymore in this country. Everybody is a commodity. You're not a human being. You're a human resource. That's why it's called HR. You're not a human being. You're a human resource. You're a commodity. You're a cost. That's it. They can lower the cost by getting rid of you. They're going to do it. It's a sad day, but that's how it operates. The NBA is more concerned with their money than they are with American principles of free speech. Can't make it up, but that's what it is. Now, China didn't like this, obviously. And there was breaking news late last night that Chinese state TV, has halted broadcast of basketball games. So, you know, you say, well, how is this related to the Chinese trade talk? Well, of course, U.S.-China trade talks, it most definitely is. This will be a talking point because the United States continues to add other companies to that blacklist, which we stated yesterday, and China has threatened to retaliate. What are they going to do? Are they going to add companies to their blacklist? Probably. But we know that the key talking points, no subsidies, changing your industrial policies, those are off the table. So I don't know what they're going to agree to. Again, pork bellies and soybeans, I don't think that's going to cut it. But, you know, maybe I missed that when, you know, during my one of my classes at Johns Hopkins when I was earning my master's degree in economics. Maybe I missed that class that soybeans are the magical beans that just is the panacea for any type of economic ailment. You know, I highly doubt it. I pay attention. But this is the story that continues to be spun. However, I do have to give some credit to Donald Trump because there is actually a statement that said, well, you know, I don't think we're going to get a complete trade deal with China. Oh, really, Sherlock? You think? This hit you after going on about 2 years of this? We're not going to get a full trade deal? I don't think you're going to get a partial one. And don't forget, folks, there is tariffs that are going to be placed on Chinese goods next week, unless by some miracle there is some sort of de-escalation over the next couple of days. who knows what's going to happen. If history is any guide, when you have this type of market sell-off the following day, the White House idiots come out and say, oh, everything's fine, there's going to be a deal. So don't hold your breath, but that's likely going to come out. Unless Donald Trump is now perfectly comfortable with saying, this is it. We're not making a deal. They want to play hardball. Good. And I'm going to tell you something, and I've stated this many times before. Donald Trump wants as many people and entities to blame as possible as he makes his way through the 2020 election. He wants to blame the Democrats. He's going to be able to do that. He wants to blame the Federal Reserve. He's going to be able to do that. And if there is no trade deal, he can continue to blame China. So he's got the pick of the litter, and he can rotate who he wants to attack and when. His base will love it, and some people who may not have voted for Donald Trump before, or maybe even some of those Democrats who crossed the line to vote for Donald Trump in 2016, will remain on Donald Trump's side. Because depending on who the Democrats put forth in 2020, they might say, you know what, that's too crazy. I can't have a stand for a socialist. That's just a bridge too far. They're either going to sit out, or they might actually vote for Donald Trump once again or for the first time. So there's a lot of moving parts. I don't want to get ahead of myself here with what's going to happen in 2020. We got a long ways to go. That's an eternity from now. And we will do an in-depth analysis, especially when it comes to the numbers in the Electoral College, because that's what you have to look at when making the determination as to how the president or his contender is going to win the White House. So much to come on that. But this U.S.-China trade talks, I mean, this is ridiculous. I'm getting sick and tired of talking about it. I'm sure you're sick and tired of hearing about it and being jerked around. There's going to be a trade deal. Now there's not going to be a complete trade deal. At least that's what Donald Trump says today. What he says tomorrow could be completely different. But the market sold off nearly 1.5% to 2%, depending on the index. For all intents and purposes, given our volatility model, we are expecting to continuously see this type of volatility in the markets for the remainder of this year and probably into next year as well. Because I can tell you something, if there is a repeat of last year's sell-off to the same degree or close to it, in my estimation, we will break through the lows of last year at the end of 2018. And where the bottom will be is anybody's guess. But that's the U.S.-China trade talks. We're going to continue hearing about this for the remainder of the week. They haven't even taken place yet. We still have to wait to see. We have a potential Brexit breakdown. I'm only going to spend a moment on this. We'll do another podcast on this because we only have a few weeks until Halloween. Trick or treat, we have to know whether or not this hard deadline is actually going to be a hard deadline, and if Prime Minister Boris Johnson of the UK is actually going to crash out of the EU without a deal, because it does not seem right now that a deal is possible. In fact, the word is impossible at this juncture. So we'll see if this is just a tactic to put more pressure on the Prime Minister's counterparts within the European Union, or if it is in fact impossible to reach a deal. And if that's the case, then it seems like it's going to be a hard Brexit exit. The markets will not like that, I can assure you. Now to the creme de la creme of the day. We had Jay Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, giving a speech this afternoon in regards to, obviously, the economy and monetary policy. I didn't catch the whole thing, but suffice to say that what we have been predicting here and talking about for months at the Capital News is now coming to fruition. They are going to continue to expand their balance sheet, to expand bank reserves, to continue to buy securities, primarily U.S. Treasuries. That, folks, is quantitative easing, but he does not want to call it quantitative easing. And do you know why he doesn't want to call it quantitative easing? Because QE was supposed to be a temporary emergency measure, which was concocted in the midst of the greatest financial crisis since the Great Depression. That's it. End of story. This is temporary. Trust us. We know what we're doing. Ben Bernanke's here, although that was the idiot who said subprime was contained. There's nothing to see here. But you know what? He was supposedly this brilliant scholar. He just supposedly happens to be the chairman of the Federal Reserve at the time when we are suffering an event that would be akin to the Great Depression. And he's there and he says, here's what we have to do. We have to print money like it's going out of style. We're going to do quantitative easing. We're going to lower interest rates. And that's what we're going to do. And it's going to work. And people trusted him. And the system was quote unquote saved, a system that should not have been saved, that we talk about exhaustively in our book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing. And we have not left quantitative easing, despite the fact that there was technically quantitative tightening. For all intents and purposes, it was a continuation. That's all it is. This has not been temporary. This has been 10 years in the making. There was an attempt at, quote-unquote, balance sheet normalization, because that's what these places is the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. We did a video on this, Capital Economics Presentation. You can find that on our website, thecapitalnews.com, or you can find it on our YouTube channel at The Capital News. And we said, are central banks trapped? And we looked at these central banks' balance sheets. We looked at the Federal Reserve's, we looked at the European Central Bank's, and we looked at the Bank of Japan's, the three most powerful central banks on the planet. And we said, look at this. This makes absolutely no sense, but this is exactly what they've done. And this is what they're going to continue to do because they're trapped. We claimed that they're trapped because central bankers are not going to come out and tell you the truth. They're not going to come out and say this is a failed and flawed and fraudulent monetary policy, a fraudulent monetary experiment that has been going on for 10 years. It's reached its limits. It is no longer effective. It's no longer working. They're not going to come out and say that. So you have to understand this. And I have the Federal Reserve's balance sheet in front of me right now with their total assets. So you have to go back. The Federal Reserve was instituted in 1913. The Fed's balance sheet, their assets. It took nearly 100 years from 1913 to 2008, 2009 to get up to $800 billion. Okay? $800 billion. Over the course of a few years, it went up to $4.5 trillion. $4.5 trillion. All right? Around 2015, they started to level off. It was not quantitative tightening. It was just allowing it to level off. They're not going to continue buying U.S. treasuries. They're not going to continue buying mortgage-backed securities to get them off the bank's books. Holding steady. Then you get Donald Trump. He's elected president. And you get Jay Powell in there as the chairman of the Federal Reserve. And you said, well, you know what? We're going to start with this quantitative tightening because the economy looks healthy. Everything looks good. We have these tax cuts coming through. We have deregulation. Everything seems to be fine. There was that mini recession in 2015, 2016 that was pretty much isolated to the manufacturing sector. But we're bouncing back. Everything's okay. We've been doing this for 10 years. We've said it's temporary. We have to start normalizing. And that's exactly what they attempted to do with quantitative easing. Basically pulling back assets, pulling liquidity out of the system at the tune of about $50 billion per month, okay? They've done this for the past year and a half. We said a couple months ago, back in July, when the Federal Reserve had their policy meeting at the end of July, we said, be on the lookout. They're going to cut interest rates, but you have to pay attention to what they do with quantitative tightening, because quantitative tightening was supposed to continue on until the end of September. Well, we said, be mindful of this. They're going to cut interest rates, but are they going to end quantitative tightening? And they did. And they did. And we said, well, now it's only going to be a matter of time before they continue to cut interest rates and before they announce quantitative easing. And then we said, well, you know what? The other thing you got to be mindful of is they're not going to call it quantitative easing. And that's exactly what is happening. They're continuing to cut interest rates and they are not calling this quantitative easing, despite the fact that their balance sheet is expanding. Okay? So you've had about $50 billion per month for the past year and a half being pulled out of the system. All right? We went from $800 billion to $4.5 trillion. It started leveling off in about 2015. All right? From 2015 to today, 4 years. All right? Because that height, about $4.5 trillion, was around October of 2015. We're in October of 2019, so that's 4 years, okay? We went down to about $3.7 trillion. That's a difference of $800 billion. Now, in the course of the last 4 weeks, we have gained back on the balance sheet, the asset side of the ledger of the Federal Reserve. It has gone up $180 billion in the course of 4 weeks, okay? This is outrageous. They are not declaring this as quantitative easing. They are not announcing that they were going to do this in the last meeting. They just said they're cutting interest rates again by 25 basis points, yada, yada, yada. We're going to be data dependent once again, which is a bunch of BS. And now you got Jay Powell saying, well, now inflation, I actually want it higher than 2% now. He wants it higher than 2% because it's asymmetric. And we've went through that many times before on previous podcasts as well. So it's never enough with these people. They're highly unlikely to get 2% inflation, even though it's well above it, but that's not the number that's going to be reported from the government. It's well above it. That's not going to be reported to us. You know it's more than 2%. You're paying for day-to-day items. You know what's going on out there, but they just want to continuously hit you over the head with the frying pan and tell you it's a blanket, it's a pillow of cotton, nothing to see here, don't pay attention to it. That's what they do. That's why they're trapped. They're not going to admit failure. Never. They will never admit failure. They will never admit a mistake. Now, the question is, how do the markets respond to this? Well, so far today, the markets were down. Now, that could be more on the back of the U.S.-China trade talks that appear to be deteriorating. Or it could be a combination of that and maybe the markets are saying, well, I thought this was an emergency measure. So why are you continuing to do this now when we're told everything's fine? We have 3.5% unemployment. We have the president who tells us every day that this is the greatest economy ever. So why do you have to continuously cut interest rates? And why now do you have to continue to expand the balance sheet? And why is the repo market once again in operation? These are three things that shouldn't be happening. Because you have to understand, ladies and gentlemen, a decade ago and previous recessions, therefore, the Federal Reserve had ammunition, if you will. They had interest rates up at 5, 6, 7%. They could cut interest rates by 500 basis points. They can't do that now unless you really want to go into negative territory. I guess that would make Donny Boy Thunder Thumbs very happy, but it wouldn't make me happy, and I can guarantee you it ain't going to make you happy either. Ask the people of Europe how they're doing. Ask the people of Japan how they're doing, how their financial system's doing. They're in the tank. And they're going down. You want that here? Because that's exactly what's going to happen. So that's why you have to be diversified. That's why you have to have an alternative to the U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar could continue to run up. Again, there could be this decoupling because the rest of the world is in such dire straits. But you have to be diversified because you never know what day this is going to break. And that's why, again, stay diversified. Have an alternative to the U.S. dollar, to all currencies for that matter, and get some gold and silver. Just a little bit, anything. Please, defend yourself to some degree. I mean, I'm looking at this graph, and again, it is just, you're almost speechless if you understand what's going on. And I don't even get highly technical here. I don't want to get in all the weeds and lose my audience and this, that, and the other, and that's fine. Just to have an understanding and an appreciation for what this is. Because this is money that we owe, ladies and gentlemen. This is our money. All right, it says it's U.S. federal notes on it if you actually look at it, but this is our money. This comes into existence not for free. With it comes a debt note, interest payment. Well, where are you going to get the interest? Who's working for it? You and me. It's our tax dollars. Paying for what? Are you getting all of this? No, you're getting very little of it, but you're getting the negative effects of it. You're getting the higher cost of living that they tell you doesn't exist. You're getting the income inequality that's been its worst since the Census Bureau has been keeping records since the 1960s. And I posit that it's even worse than that. And we've gone through that on previous podcasts here as well. So the Federal Reserve is trapped. This is an emergency monetary measure. And they don't want to call it QE because that would say, well, wait a minute, that's an emergency measure. I thought everything was fine. Why would you do this? They're trapped like rats, and all they're going to do is they're going to dig deeper and deeper and deeper into the ground, because that's all they know how to do, and that's exactly what we're witnessing. The question's going to be, how does Jay Powell handle this at the end of this month during his press conference, and what does the Federal Reserve, how do they announce it? Are they just going to say that this is now normal operations? This is what the Federal Reserve does? Is this some sort of natural expansion of the balance sheet? How are they going to spin this? That is what we're going to have to pay attention to, because they will try to fine-tune this. They're going to try to walk the tightrope as far as they can. But I am telling you, this is not good. This is not good. So we have, again, two scenarios as far as I'm concerned with the markets. It's going to be that melt-up scenario, or it's going to be a breakdown scenario. You know my bias. You know my opinion. I think we're tilted more towards the downside than we are to the upside. The only two things, in my opinion, that could have catapulted this thing to have some sort of euphoric melt-up would have been some sort of substantial trade deal, which now seems less and less likely, which is what we've been talking about here for months, and the Federal Reserve coming to the quote-unquote rescue with a whole bunch of more money printing and the addicts on Wall Street absolutely loving it, and they just say, buy everything. That could still happen. That could most definitely still happen. I think, again, the probability and the likelihood of that U.S.-China trade deal of substance is on the back burner, way, way back on the back burner. But the Federal Reserve seemingly coming to the rescue could be enough to jazz these markets to have some sort of melt-up through the remainder of this year. I am skeptical of that, but you know what? The market can remain irrational a lot longer than any of us can remain solvent. So always remember that and be prepared. But, you know, we have our volatility model. It looks at both sides of the ledger, the plus side and the negative side. Anything could happen. That's why we say stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. Thank you so much for joining me today, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to stay focused on this because we have to. We have to. Please like, share, subscribe, get the word out, and leave your comments. We do love hearing from you. This is the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.